Translation, the two brothers, Shivas Pandit and Sri Ram Pandit, started two branches that are well known in the world. Purport. In the Gauraganadesh Deepika, verse 90, Shivas Pandit is described to be an incarnation of Narada Muni. And Sri Ram Pandit, his younger brother, is said to be an incarnation of Parvat Muni, a great friend of Narada's. Shivas Pandit's wife, Malini, is celebrated as an incarnation of the nurse Ambika, who fed Lord Krishna with her breast milk, and as already noted, his niece, Narayani, the mother of Thakur Vrindavan Das, the author of Chaitanya Bhagavat, was the sister of Ambika in Krishna Lila. We also understand from the description of Chaitanya Bhagavat that after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's acceptance of the sannyas order, Shivas Pandit left Navadvip, possibly because of feelings of separation, and domiciled at Kumarahatta. So, I was thinking a lot about how to, you know, give a whole class on this particular verse and purport. And, there's a lot of things that can be said because of the, you know, the internal identities of these personalities. We know that, for instance, Narada Muni who is the, which of course is the secret identity or not so secret identity, Shivas Thakur and Parvat Muni, who was his closest friend, Prabhupada describes them in an interesting way. In the first canto, he says, Parvat Muni is considered to be one of the oldest sages. He is almost always a constant companion of Narada Muni. They are also spacemen. Prabhupada, eternal spacemen. In the early days at 22nd Avenue, I forget who it was, they wrote some song, you know, about the spacemen. And anyway, he says, they are also spacemen competent to travel in the air without the help of any material vehicle. Parvat Muni is also a Devarshi, or a great sage amongst the demigods, like Narada. He was present along with Narada at the sacrificial ceremony of Maharaj Janmanjaya, son of Maharaj Parikshit. In this sacrifice, all the snakes of the world were to be killed. This was a kind of revenge against the snake that killed his father. So, of course, that was ultimately stopped by the sages. Parvat Muni and Narada Muni are called Gandharvas also because they can travel in the air singing the glories of the Lord. Since they can travel in the air, they observed Draupadi Swayambar ceremony, selecting of her own husband, from the air. So they didn't observe it from the ground. They observed it from above. Like Narada Muni, Parvat Muni also used to visit the royal assembly in the heaven of King Indra. As a Gandharva, sometimes he visited the royal assembly of Kuvera, one of the important demigods. Both Narada and Parvat were once in trouble. Now, I don't know the full explanation of this story, but it sounds quite interesting. It says, they were once in trouble with the daughter of Maharaj Shrinjaya. Maharaj Shrinjaya got the benediction of a son by Parvat Muni. So that's the description of Parvat Muni in the first canto. Then there's one of Narada Muni also. It says, he's inevitably associated with the narrations of the Puranas. So all the great histories, Puranic histories, Narada Muni shows up practically everywhere. He is described in the Bhagavatam. In his previous life, he was the son of a maidservant, but by good association with pure devotees, he became enlightened in devotional service. And in the next life, he became a perfect man, comparable with himself only. So that's quite a description. He says he became a perfect man who could only be compared with himself. So in other words, you couldn't really top when it comes to devotees. So it's interesting that Shrivas Thakur, Shrivas Pandit, same person, Shrivas Pandit, sometimes he's referred to as Shrivas Pandit, sometimes as Shrivas Thakur. He's the ultimate emblem of the spiritual master in the Jiva Tattva category. He's a completely empowered, perfected human being. That there is no limitations in terms of time and space for him. He's eternally situated in a spiritual body, traveling throughout both the material and spiritual worlds. So it's hard to even conceive of the power and the grace of such a personality. And I, just on that basis, I wanted to read. This is something that Prabhupada wrote in a letter to one of his disciples. Out of his own humility, he describes himself like this. Someone had written to him about feeling themselves to be unqualified. To feel himself unqualified as a devotee. And he said, actually, this is Prabhupada's words. Actually, we are all conditioned souls. So our demand from Krishna to accept us is unreasonable. It's a pretty interesting opening statement. Our demand for Krishna to accept us is unreasonable. He says, from my personal point of view, I think that I am so sinful that I cannot even approach Krishna to show me any favor. But I have only one hope, my spiritual master. He is very kind. So, some way or other, he is dragging me towards Krishna. That is the only hope. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita says, therefore, Guru Krishna, by the mercy of the spiritual master and by the mercy of Krishna, one gets into Krishna consciousness. Narada Muni is our original spiritual master, and he has dragged so many fallen souls towards Krishna. And we are also hoping to be dragged by him through the disciplic succession. Otherwise, if we study our own qualifications, there is none. Rather, I have got so many disqualifications. So this is the actual mood of a real spiritual master, that they are thinking themselves to be completely unqualified, and they only dangling or continuing on by the grace of their spiritual master. They don't give themselves any particular credit. In fact, we know that Bhaktisiddhanta used to say that if one thinks that he's a guru, he's actually something else called Garu, which means cow. So that's the mentality of an elevated devotee. So, and just to finish off this little description that Prabhupada gives of Narada, he says, in the Mahabharata, his name is mentioned in many places. He is the principal Devarshi, or the chief sage amongst the demigods. He is a son and disciple of Brahmaji, and from him the disciplic succession in the line of Brahma has been spread. He initiated Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and many celebrated devotees of the Lord. He even initiated Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedic literatures. And from Vyasadeva, Madhvacharya was initiated, and thus the Madhva Sampradaya, in which the Gaudiya Sampradaya is also included, has spread all over the universe. So apparently it's not limited to the earth. The Gaudiya Sampradaya says here, it's spread all over the universe. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu belonged to this Madhva Sampradaya. Therefore, Brahmaji, Narada, Vyas, down to Madhva, Chaitanya, and the Goswamis all belong to the same line of disciplic succession. Naradaji has instructed many kings from time immemorial. In the Bhagavatam, we can see that he instructed Prahlad Maharaj while he was in the womb of his mother. And he instructed Vasudeva, father of Krishna, as well as Maharaj Yudhisthira. So this is just to give some idea of the importance of Srivast Thakur and Narada Muni, such great personality. So we know that the nocturnal kirtans, Srivast Anga, that's actually cited as the place where the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya was initiated. They used to chant sometimes all night. And also it was the site of, they used to do different dramas. Lord Chaitanya at one point became the goddess of fortune, and there were all the, Haridas Thakur was a policeman, and I don't know exactly, it's kind of an interesting drama. Haridas Thakur was running around kind of shaking his stick and telling people to get ready, that Lord Chaitanya was going to dance as the goddess of fortune. So many amazing things happened in the house of Srivast Thakur. And, of course, he was an elder. Like Haridas Thakur, he descended prior to the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. And he was totally dedicated to Lord Chaitanya. He and his wife and his whole family or completely sold out to Lord Chaitanya. And it's described in the Anchalila that Lord Chaitanya always appeared in four places. That means even when he was not so-called physically present, he appeared, it says, in the household temple of Mother Sachi. This was especially, of course, after he took sannyas. In the places where Sri Nityananda Prabhu danced, in the house of Srivas Pandit during congregational chanting. So that means now, if you go to Srivas Anga and chant congregationally, if you're fortunate, you might see Lord Chaitanya there. And in the house of Raghava Pandit. He appeared because of his attraction to the love of his devotees. So that's what invokes the presence of Lord Chaitanya, is the feeling that devotees have about him. Their intense devotion will cause his manifestation. So that is his natural characteristic, to respond to love. And we know from Bhagavad Gita also, yeyatamang prapadyante tangstachai, that it's a reciprocal thing. Depending on the character and the nature and the depth of the approach, then the Lord reciprocates accordingly. Well, let's see if I've got time to do everything I thought about doing today. I don't know. there was a famous incident, a kind of a remarkable incident that took place in the house of Srivas Thakur, when in the midst of an intense and very powerful kirtan, Lord Chaitanya was dancing in ecstasy, but there arose in the house this tremendous wailing. And Srivas Thakur went to the inner portion of the house to find out what was going on, and one of his sons had just passed away. So there is an extensive description of this incident in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a song cycle describing this incident. So, and it's so poetically expressed, and has such a kind of a deep significance in the form of instruction that I'm going to read it. I'm just going to read the English verses. It's the same description that you'll find in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, just in a slightly more poeticized form. So I wanted to read this because there's so many valuable instructions in it. It says, along with the playing of the mridanga drum and kartals, and amidst victorious shouts of Jai, Jai, the dramatic dance of the Lord dispelled the grief of all those who witnessed it. Becoming madly intoxicated in supreme ecstatic love, all the assembled devotees completely forgot themselves and incessantly began to dance and chant wildly, completely surrounding Lord Gaurachandra. So it appears it's okay to dance wildly from this description. But not faking it, of course. No show bottle. It has to come from within. You know, sometimes people, when there's a kirtan and somebody's not dancing, people start like practically ostracizing them. That's not quite the right mood. The mood is that ecstasy or feeling should arise from within a person's heart. If it isn't there, there's no point in jostling them about. I don't think that I've never heard that jostling creates love of God. So anyway, sorry, little footnote there. At this time, within the inner chamber of Srivas's house, one of his sons suddenly died due to some disease, as ordained by the will of Providence. Due to separation from the boy, all the women of the household began to lament and cry out in a loud voice. And as this goes on, Bhaktivinoda kind of interjects, you know, his kind of like his reflections on this particular pastime. So he says, now Bhaktivinoda fears that the transcendental mellows of the Lord's kirtan will be disturbed by the uprising of such loud crying sounds. However, Srivas Pandit has understood the cause of this sound and personally entered the house. So he's kind of given commentary as he tells the story. Entering into the inner chamber, Srivas began to pacify all the women there by giving them spiritual instructions that were as sweet as nectar. Well, when you hear these instructions, you might wonder, are they sweet as nectar? Because he gets pretty heavy. He said, look here, you crazy ladies. You all lament uselessly. For what kind of unhappiness can there possibly be in ecstatic love of Krishna? Some of this stuff, Bhaktivinoda even comments that some of these instructions seem kind of like, you know, if somebody just lost their son and you're getting on their case, you know, that they should be quiet. It seems a little intense, but you'll see how it comes out very nicely anyway. Then he goes on, this is Srivas Thakur speaking, whoever has Krishna for his eternal son never has to lament for anything. But if one becomes attached to temporary sons, then everything is lost. You have all come into this material world for the purpose of worshiping Krishna. So now you should all become situated again in the eternal absolute truth. As long as you are existing in this body, you should cultivate love and attachment for Lord Krishna, knowing him to be your real wealth, real friend, and your very life and soul. All the attendants of this body, namely brothers, friends, husbands, and sons, should be accepted as being only temporary relatives. Temporary relatives. You have the eternal relatives and the temporary relatives. Whoever wants to hold on to husbands or sons will not be able to keep them. For all these affiliations are impermanent. Even if your son is sitting in your very lap, you still cannot protect him. For when the consequences of his bad fruit of reactions take effect, then his present karma is finished, and he will not be able to remain here any longer. Being involved in the happiness and distress of temporary material relationships, many other living entities are now being degraded into lower species of life, falling far, far away from Krishna's lotus feet. Therefore, you should immediately give up your useless lamentation and just become absorbed in the bliss of the Lord's holy names. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments, all of Bhaktivinoda's desires are now being fulfilled by hearing Srivas speak such nice eternal truths. Then Srivas Thakur goes on, you have already dedicated all of your wealth, relatives, body, and entire household unto Krishna, so please just remember this now with a pure heart. Why are you exclaiming, my son, in great sadness? Krishna has simply taken his own devotee to suit his own happiness. Krishna is causing all things to take place according to his own sweet will. In light of that, all your ideas of happiness and distress are merely ignorant mental concoctions. Whatever Krishna's desire is, you must accept only that to be truly good. Renouncing all of your separate personal desires, relieve yourselves of this unnecessary botheration. So he calls the disappearance of his son and their lamentation an unnecessary botheration. It seems like, you know, to a conditioned ear, it seems rather harsh. But anyway, he goes on. Krishna gives everything. Krishna takes away everything. Krishna maintains everyone or destroys everyone whenever he likes, according to his own fancy. If someone maintains a desire that is contrary to Krishna's desire, then such a wish does not become fruitful. Indeed, one only gets trouble and anguish. So he's saying if you maintain any desire separate from Krishna's, you're just going to suffer. Therefore, and it was obviously Krishna's desire to take the son, he's saying, so what's the point of all this lamentation? Therefore, giving up all of your lamentation, just listen to the ecstatic chanting of Krishna's holy name, which is going on now out in the courtyard. From this, you will get the topmost transcendental bliss, and all of your wishes will be fulfilled. So he's saying you're not going to lose anything if you just absorb yourself in the kirtan instead of all this lamentation. Bhaktivinoda now begs at Srivas Pandit's lotus feet for the power to completely surrender his soul to Krishna in life or in death. So actually, the thing about these pastimes, that one, you see Bhaktivinoda's mood is he's just thinking of how he can get the mercy of Srivas Thakur to understand these points, because it's very difficult when one is in attached situation, attached household life, then it's very difficult to fully take these type of instructions to heart. It's difficult. It's a challenge. So he's begging for the mercy of Srivas Thakur so that he can try to understand these things more deeply. So then Srivas Thakur goes on and says, all of you together should now consider the real fate of the boy, and you should immediately give up any bewilderment and grief that may be in your disturbed hearts. The Supreme Lord of all the 14 worlds is the youthful son of Nanda Maharaj, and now he has become the son of Mother Sachi by personally descending in Nadia. This very same Gokula Chanda is now dancing in my courtyard with his most confidential devotees, all completely overwhelmed in ecstatic bliss. My boy has given up his body while hearing the singing of the Lord's holy names coming from this kirtan out in the courtyard. Therefore, he certainly has died while absorbed in love for Lord Hari. Should any of us be so fortunate to get an auspicious death such as this, then we would certainly be able to easily cross over the ocean of material existence. All of you together, just consider this. What will your lamentation and disturbed hearts do to help the situation? If you do not become pacified by these instructions, then you will only cheat yourselves out of tasting transcendentally ecstatic mellows in the long run. Not only will you cheat yourselves, but you will also induce me to leave this world by plunging myself into the waters of the celestial Ganges. So he says, if they don't stop it, I'm going to go jump in the Ganges. Thus, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is witnessing, thus Bhaktivinoda is witnessing all this calamity in progress. Hearing these words of Srivas Pandit, all those chaste and faithful ladies gave up their lamentation for the dead son. Covering up the body, they again fixed their minds in the transcendental mellows of Lord Hari. So you can imagine how advanced they were. That just by hearing these instructions, they immediately accepted it and absorbed themselves in the kirtan again. These are very elevated personalities. So, then Srivas again came out into the courtyard and, filled with joy, resumed dancing with Lord Chaitanya and loudly sang the glories of the son of Nanda Maharaj, completely forgetting about what had just happened. The boy had expired only 1.5 hours after dark, but out in the courtyard no one knew about it due to the loud kirtan. Then for 9 hours there was continuous chanting of the auspicious holy names. Thus, the entire night had elapsed in this ecstatic singing. Then the kirtan finally stopped. And Lord Gauri said, why am I feeling some sadness here? I perceive that something inauspicious has happened in this house today, which has deprived me of bliss. Then the devotees related to the Lord the story of the death of Srivas' son. Hearing this news, Lord Gauri loudly exclaimed, oh no! What has happened? What has happened? Now the core of my heart has been pierced with unbearable pain. Why didn't you inform me of this calamity when it first happened? Now Bhaktivinoda has completely lost himself in the affection that the Lord shows to his own devotees. Then, hearing the words of the Lord, Srivas Pandit began crying out, please hear me, O Lord. I am unable to tolerate anything that interrupts the ecstatic mellows of your kirtan. Only one of my sons has died, O Lord. And has that really upset me? Even if all my sons die, then I would still get more than enough happiness simply by seeing you. I would certainly die on the spot if I were to interrupt your dancing, O Lord. That is why I did not inform you of this bad news, for I was dreading the calamity of disturbing your ecstasy. So, it's for us, perhaps it sounds like, wow, this is very extreme, almost fanatical worship of another person. But this is his deep love and affection for Lord Chaitanya, that he only wants to offer him happiness and pleasure and without any conditions. So this is his mood. He says, Lord, if you will kindly grant us permission now, then we shall take the boy's body away and perform the proper funeral rites. Hearing this much from Srivas Pandit, the jewel of the twice-born Lord Gaurasundar then broke down and began to weep piteously on the spot. Crying, the Lord thought to himself, how could I possibly abandon such loving servitors and go elsewhere by taking sannyas? If I were to do so, my heart would certainly split. Hearing this type of talk, Bhaktivinoda's mind has become somewhat apprehensive. Then The Lord ordered the household members to bring the boy's body out into the courtyard, and they immediately complied. The merciful Lord Gora, who removes the contaminating influence of the age of Kali, then addressed the body. "Please tell me, dear boy, whatever prompted you to leave here so suddenly, thus giving up your loving father, Srivas Pandit?" Being thus questioned by the Lord, the soul again manifested in the dead body by the mercy of the Lord, and he began to offer very nice prayers, which were meant to be instructive to all persons. So this is a little bit like that pastime with, was it Chitraketu? And the son, his son dies, and then this, he comes forth to instruct from beyond the grave, so to speak. So this boy begins to speak. "My dear Lord, you are without a doubt the supreme absolute truth, unlimited, and one without a second. Since you are the supremely energetic, all of your transcendental energies are certainly none different from you." He starts off in this very philosophical vein here. Very, very philosophical. He says, "Your transcendental potency manifests in three different ways, and it assists in the performance of your eternal pastimes in different ways according to your own sweet will. The original form of the cognizant potency is called Chit Shakti, is manifesting your eternal pastimes in the spiritual world. And just for your delight, it becomes the pleasure-giving potency known as Ladini. Secondly, becoming the Jiva Shakti, the potency produces multitudes of fine conscious particles which make up the glowing effulgence of your transcendental body. All of these souls are thus manifest with a natural marginal characteristic of minute independence. Thirdly, becoming the Maya Shakti, the potency creates innumerable material universes, and within them she captures and binds all the souls who choose to remain averse to you, my dear Lord." Hearing these prayers offered to Lord Chaitanya by the dead boy, Bhaktivinoda says at this point that he himself has become averse to the Lord due to his offenses and has been swallowed up by Maya and the material world. In other words, Bhaktivinoda here is saying that he completely identifies with all these conditioned souls who are in Maya. That he feels the same adverse, he understands and is experiencing the adverse nature of the living conditioned living being. Resentful or envious of the Lord. The dead son continues, You, dear Lord, are completely full of transcendental bliss. I am simply a tiny conscious particle of you. Therefore, by nature, I am your eternal servant. Only you are supremely independent, whereas I am totally dependent on you. Indeed, neglecting your lotus feet, I have now become completely ruined. As soon as I chose to be independent of your lordship, my mind became interested in Maya's allurements. Thus I have given up my inherent spiritual nature. Falling down due to the dazzling bewilderment of fruitive gain, I have been captured by Maya within this mundane world. Now as a result, I am being forcibly tossed about on the revolving wheel of fruitive actions and reactions. Thus, I am bound up by Maya in this world. According to your will, being firmly clenched in the iron-like grip of my predestined fate. So this is a very nice description that given here by Bhaktivinoda. He says, characterizing the soul as being firmly clenched in the iron-like grip of my predestined fate. And according to this fate, I have been brought into Srivasa's home to appear as his son by taking birth in the womb of his wife Malini. Now, he's not saying, if you notice, he's calling his father Srivas, and he's calling his mother Malini. So, in other words, as the soul, he's saying, okay, I've been here, there, and everywhere, and now I'm here. He's saying, but again, according to my predestined fate, I must now leave this place. I cannot remain here any longer, even if I wanted to. Your desire is most powerful, dear Lord, whereas my desire is most feeble, for I am simply an insignificant fallen soul. Wherever you send me next, O Lord, I must certainly go to become someone's son or husband or father. However, I know that all these material relationships do not possess even one speck of eternal truth. For only you are the eternal friend and guardian of all souls. Only one who foolishly neglects the eternal shelter of your two lotus feet considers the union and separation of all these temporary family relationships to be happiness and distress. This just shows how much one has become absorbed in the bodily concept of life, being bound up in the womb of illusion. So we're bound up in the womb of illusion. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments, hearing all these truths about the fate of the conditioned soul has now made Bhaktivinoda become extremely frightened. So in other words, he's sort of intimidated by the actual, I guess you could say, the existential position of a conditioned soul in this world. He's realizing, boy, this is a terrible situation to be a conditioned soul in this material world. It says, the dead boy continues, thus I have been captured and bound by Maya. Due to being tied tightly by her ropes of ignorance and bewilderment, I have undergone many, many births since that time. Simply wandering here and there in the ghastly darkness of Maya's illusions. Sometimes I became a demigod, sometimes a demon, and sometimes I got the body of a man, an animal, a bird, or an insect. Sometimes I wander up to heaven, sometimes down to hell, and sometimes here on earth, being carried away the whole time by innumerable materialistic hopes and aspirations. I have no idea what kind of pious credit I must have earned to be born as the son of Sri Shivas, Pandit, within the holy abode of Navadvip in this life. Thus, I myself am amazed that I have had the great fortune of actually being able to see and touch your lotus feet, O Lord. Usually, whenever I have to die, I experience a great pain, and I experience great pain and distress upon leaving the particular body I happen to be in. But this time, I am only experiencing great happiness by discussing all these topics related to your glories. However, my time is now up, so I must take your leave. If it is your desire that I should take another birth, O Lord, I humbly request your Lordship to kindly allow me to be always situated in the transcendental loving service of your divine lotus feet. Saying this, the boy became silent. Seeing this wonderful pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shivas Pandit's whole family gave up all of their lamentation and were overwhelmed with great happiness. Thus, the transcendental character and activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are just like a continuous shower of ambrosia. Bhaktivinoda is thereby losing his life force, begging Srivas Thakur to allow him to drink more of this nectarian ambrosia. So then Lord Chaitanya begins to glorify Srivas Pandit. He says, my dear Srivas, you are actually my eternal servant. Indeed, I am staying in this world only due to your affection for me. You, Srivas Pandit, are the commander-in-chief of all my devotees. Today, your glorious character will be acclaimed throughout the three worlds. You are never subject to the bondage of Maya Devi, the proprietress of this prison-like material world. All the people of the world are witness to this fact. You have dedicated unto me all of your wealth, followers, body, and household paraphernalia, and thus you have become most joyful by being so nicely situated in my eternal service. The whole of your existence in this world is only for the purpose of facilitating my pastimes. Thus, here's an important point. He says, thus your exemplary behavior as a transcendental family man is ideal for instructing all the materialistic householders. He says, Sri Nityananda Prabhu and I are helplessly bound to your pure love for us. We know that you enjoy great happiness by considering us to be your very own sons. We are truly your eternal sons, for we see that you are not attached to any of your temporary sons, who are all subject to the material conditions of creation and destruction. Because of your pure devotion, I'm eternally indebted to you. And because of your saintly character, you are also quite deserving of my indebtedness. Hearing these loving words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this rascal, Bhaktivinoda, now begs at the feet of Srivast Thakur in humble supplication to receive the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga. Seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu show such favorable grace to Srivast Pandit, all the devotees present there began this dance ecstatically, while repeatedly shouting, Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jai Nityananda, with resounding voices. It is simply not possible to describe the ecstatic mood that arose in Srivast's house at that time. It was just like a great battle of transcendental emotions was taking place between joyful bliss and mournful crying, all arising due to ecstatic love for Krishna. Then the four brothers of the dead boy came over and fell down at Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, weeping and wailing with piteous voices choked with ecstatic love. And they began to petition the Lord. They said, O Lord of our lives, if calamities like this would happen every day, then that would only increase our deep loving attachment to your lotus feet. This calamity of losing our brother today is actually our great fortune. For on this day, we are remembering your lordship. If on some other day we are bereft of your remembrance, then that day is actually the real calamity for us, O Lord. Falling down at the feet of Srivast Pandit's entire family, Bhaktivinoda thus narrates how their Lord Gaurasundar is bestowing his causeless mercy upon all distressed souls. I was just thinking that we don't see any hesitation on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's part to offer obeisances to all the family members of Srivast Pandit also. That, there was no such idea, these are women, or these are boys, or these are... No, he was unrestrictedly offering his obeisances to the entire family. It says, Lord Chaitanya, who is so affectionate to his own devotees, then took the dead boy, and along with all the devotees, began to chant the most auspicious sound vibration of the holy names. Thus singing, they all arrived on the bank of the Janavi, the Ganges. Then they performed the funeral rites with some water from that holy river. The personified Ganga Mayi, Sri Janavi Devi, said to herself, such unlimited auspicious fortune has become mine today. Now I have achieved the fruits of all my vows and penances. Well, on the last page now, so... I know this is a little lengthy, but I thought it was good. When Lord Chaitanya personally put the boy's body into the river, Janavi Devi picked up the body and held it. Bringing the dead boy out of the water, she touched the lotus feet of Lord Gaura. Still holding the body, she began to tremble in ecstatic love for the Lord. Seeing such an ecstatic mood being exhibited by Sri Janavi Devi, all the assembled devotees immediately began chanting the auspicious holy names incessantly. From the heavens, the demigods began to shower flowers. They crowded in the sky with their innumerable airplanes, almost blocking out the sunlight. In this way, everyone present was absorbed in various ecstasies. After performing the funeral rites, they all bathed in the river together. Everyone then returned to their respective homes in great happiness, and Bhaktivinoda is now completely immersed in the transcendental ecstasies of Lord Gaurasundar. The activities performed by Lord Gaurasundar within the town of Nadia are just like sweet ambrosial nectar. By drinking this nectar, just give up all of your material lamentations and fears and make your heart become thus fixed up. The material world is impermanent, my friends. The only substantial essence of absolute truth is Lord Krishna. Therefore, just worship Krishna incessantly, according to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Whoever understands this and firmly grabs hold of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet is most fortunate. And if he worships Sri Sri Radha Krishna in Braj, then I will accept him as my very life and soul. Their lordships, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, are none other than Lord Gaurachandra, and Sri Navadvip Dham is that very same Vrindavan Dham. If you consider this to be the most essential truth, then you will receive some eternal treasures. I am completely devoid of any real knowledge or good intelligence. Indeed, I am most lowly, insignificant, and contemptible. I am also lacking the slightest trace of pious karma or proper philosophical understanding, and I am completely bereft of any virtuous behavior. All the assembled Vaishnavas, whom I consider to be my spiritual masters, have given me this title of Bhaktivinoda. But because I am totally devoid of any trace of devotion, this title has simply become like a painful disease for me. Taking great care to check the spreading of this disease, I have sought refuge at the lotus feet of all the Vaishnavas. Accepting the dust of the Vaishnavas' lotus feet upon my head, the lowly Bhakti Vinod sings this story called Shoka Satana, the Dispelling of Grief. So, we'll pause there. Now, anybody have any questions or points they'd like to raise?